fever. If you've never been dragged out of a middle school dance by your mom while she's wearing sweatpants and carrying your pajama-clad little brother over her shoulder, then you haven't had the same kind of life I'm leading this year. As she rushed me to the car at breakneck speed, my mom told me what was going on. "We're going to the emergency room. Your brother has a fever." I looked at the top of Jeffrey's sleeping head, and even in the dim school hallway lights, I could see that his hair was all matted with sweat. "Why is that an emergency? What does it mean? Where's Dad?" "Dad is still at his dinner. I don't know the name of the restaurant, and his cell phone must be turned off. Anytime your brother gets a fever from now on, it's an emergency. I don't know what this means. Get the doors, please."
"Okay. Mom, is this serious?"
"I don't know, honey. I don't know. I wish I knew." She must have thought the situation was pretty urgent, though, because she usually won't leave the house in sweats, and I noticed she hadn't even taken the time to put shoes on Jeffrey. Also, she's the careful driver in our family on most days, but our ride to the hospital was like the Indy 500. I didn't even have time to think of how in the world I was going to explain this away to my friends on Monday. I was mostly too busy trying to keep from passing out from the incredible G-forces every time we turned a corner. Somehow, Jeffrey didn't wake up, but he was definitely groaning in his sleep. I reached over and crammed his blanket between his head and the corner of his booster seat so he wouldn't get whipped around so much. My hand brushed against his forehead, and he was definitely ragingly hot. The ER staff didn't mess around at all when we got there. As soon as my mom said the word leukemia, there were doctors, nurses, and technicians swarming all over. The doctor in charge was barking orders like a Marine drill sergeant with questions in between from my mom.
"We'll need a CBC in full differential. Do you know what his last counts were? Does he have a catheter? What kind? Take his shirt off. Okay, access the portacath. Make a note, we'll need to run some heparin soon. Get the bloods first. We have to have those numbers."
As they started to take Jeffrey's clothes off, he woke up. I guess he wasn't surprised to find himself in a hospital. Both he and my mother seemed to have become used to this bizarre world. I couldn't even understand what the doctors and nurses were saying, but they were both clued in to this secret language. He didn't say anything as they took his temperature orally, even though he used to always make a big show of choking when my parents did it at home. He responded to all of the commands that came his way. "Tilt your head, take 3 deep breaths, lean forward, please," with mute obedience. Until they laid him down and went for his chest with a needle. Now I knew that something had been done to Jeffrey's chest in Philadelphia. I had seen the 2 lines of stitches and the round bulge under the skin of his ribs. But during the whole period up until that night, the medical stuff had only sunk in to a point. I only accepted what I had to accept to make sense of any given moment. So I only really knew that he was taking steroids every day, for example, when I saw him gagging down the syringes of bitter liquid in the kitchen every morning and night. And I guess now was my moment to believe in the portacath, which was an IV tube that had been surgically implanted under the skin a couple of inches above Jeffrey's right nipple. Jeffrey pulled away from the doctor when he saw the needle and asked in a little pathetic voice,
"Can't we do the EMLA?"
I didn't know it then, but EMLA is a cream that makes your skin numb. They had been using EMLA so Jeffrey wouldn't feel the hurt of the needle as it stabbed through his skin to get at the catheter in his chest. The doctor's voice softened then, and he almost whispered to Jeffrey,
"I'm sorry, buddy. The EMLA takes an hour to work, and we can't wait."
Then the doctor half turned to me and asked Jeffrey,
"Would it help if your brother held your hand?"
Jeffrey didn't respond at all, but he looked at me, and his eyes were brimming. I am pretty squeamish about shots and blood and stuff, but what was I gonna do? I grabbed his hand and let him sort of lean his head on my shoulder without sitting up from his pillow. I started the, "You're okay, Jeffy," chant, and a nurse scrubbed the circle of skin over the port with yellowish-orange stuff. Then she broke open one of those sterile packets that needles come in and took out a truly large one, which was bent in the middle at a 90-degree angle. Jeffrey started to whimper, and the tears began to soak the shoulder of my shirt, but he didn't even flinch as the huge needle jabbed straight into his chest. The nurse taped the needle in place, and I closed my eyes. I heard someone say,
"Flushing the port,"
and then I got a little woozy. Jeffrey kept squeezing my hand really hard for a few minutes until the blood specimens had all been taken and an IV line was hooked up to his port. I think we both fell asleep for a little while. When I opened my eyes, the doctor was talking with my mom. Neither of them noticed I was awake, so I just lay there and listened. Evidently, Jeffrey had what should have been a simple ear infection, but his white blood cell counts were low because of the chemotherapy drugs he was on,
so his body couldn't fight off germs very well. The doctor was saying that Jeffrey would need to spend a few days in the hospital, getting antibiotics through his IV line in addition to his regular chemo medicines. My mom didn't look pleased.